Okay. We'll get underway then with the minutes from the May 5th meeting. Those were distributed, and I've reviewed them. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
Hey, yeah, this is Matt. I have a question. I don't know if the other commissioners got the email that Vicki sent over. I just have a question about how our meeting minutes are taking place, how they're structured. The email that I got from Vicki said that she took 15 hours to transcribe our last meeting. And our meetings are audio recorded, and I don't know of any state law that requires us to transcribe them. So I guess I'm wondering, why is that happening? That's two full days of a state employee's job.
Yeah, I agree with you. Vicki and I chatted a little bit about that after the meeting, and that was something that I'm glad you reminded me of that. It was something I wanted to talk about today. I agree. I don't think there's anything necessary about to do that. We can just hit the general highlights of the nature of the conversation. Is there... We retain the recordings, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is Matt. I mean, I guess I'd ask the question, why is that being done? I mean, Vicki, I've met her. She's a very capable, smart person. I couldn't imagine sitting there for 2 days straight typing up what basically was just a conversation. We, other than the executive action on the loans, which is routine, we didn't vote on anything, I don't think. It was just a discussion. I mean, other than saying we discussed land, I don't know. I always thought minutes should entail things like a motion was presented by this person, it was seconded, and then the vote on it. I mean, in my history of reading minutes from county boards or wherever, that's typically what meeting minutes are. This just seems like an absolute waste of state time.
Well, this is Doug. Historically, over the last 20 years, our meetings were very brief, 5 or 6 minutes, and it wasn't a big problem. Recently, we've had much longer meetings, particularly when we had that invited guest come. So that does present kind of an issue. I would ask Tom German, our lawyer, what is the legal requirement to do anything with our minutes?
Well, Doug, it's not required that they be totally transcribed. I think the main reason that Vicki was doing a more in-depth transcription is because a lot of the recent meetings were a little bit muddled in terms of what was actually the point of the discussion and what was the motion. And so I think she was doing it in order to be able to then take that transcription and distill it down into the more meat and potatoes.
I mean,
this
is Matt. I mean, if I would understand if Vicki went back to the audio recording to get the exact language of the actual motion, but there wasn't any motion. I mean, even what I read in this meeting minute, I mean, I'll just be brief on this, was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this back and forth, we just don't need that. The minutes, we have the audio recordings, and I mean, you asked Tom, I mean, we're with the Attorney General here. My understanding is there's no law requiring any kind of verbatim transaction. This is not needed. So I don't want staff time going forward, and I don't think we can make a motion on it because this is the other meetings, but I want that on the next agenda item because I want that to end. I mean, that's just, we have the audio recordings. We don't need it any beyond that. That's just silly.
I don't think a motion's necessary. I think this is something that
Tia
can simply address with her staff, and that can be the end of that. I don't think we need to take any board action. Do you see any reason for that, Doug?
Yeah, that's fine. We can get a report at our next meeting if they've come up with some way to do this more efficiently.
All right, much more efficiently. Thank you.
Yeah. The challenge is if Vicki is not in the meeting, she has to listen to the entire meeting, and that meeting took 2.5 hours, and she took notes while she was doing that, trying to capture the essence of it. We're in uncharted territory. You know, this used to be a very routine matter. Since the new board was seated, it's been less so. This particular meeting took 2.5 hours. Vicki could not be here the whole time. That will happen again, and the only way to know what happened is to listen to the whole thing. So, I will work with Vicki on it. I guess what one thing that I guess I would suggest is that we put the MP3 files on our website, because right now the public can review board actions by reviewing the minutes. If we're not going to do that, then
this is Matt.
Can I just finish speaking, please?
Well, I'm a commissioner. I'd like to speak about this. All of this seems a little much.
I'd like to finish my sentence.
Well,
yeah, you interrupted her.
Well, it could. Well, how long am I going to sit? 20 minutes? I mean, it could be a while.
Tia, go ahead.
Yeah, I will work with Vicki on this. It was an unusual situation last time. I would recommend for public transparency that we put the MP3 files on our website. And the board can decide whatever it likes.
All right, this is Matt. I would think that it would make sense. Whoever's doing the meeting minutes would be in the meeting. I noticed from the meeting minutes last meeting that we had two people from the Northern office that seemingly drove down to come to the meeting, but yet Vicki, who's in the office, wasn't in the meeting. It just makes sense that Vicki, whoever's going to be responsible for meeting minutes, and if she can't do it, I would imagine somebody else, whether it's Tom or Tia, could do it. I mean, the person, whoever's doing the meeting minutes should be in the meeting. They should do general stuff, motions made. They can note the time, you know, an hour into it, so they have to go back to it to get the exact language of the motion. I can't imagine this happening anywhere else in government. It just seems crazy to me. And to put all of our meetings online, I mean, I'm okay. Everything we say is public record, but it seems a little much, but I'll let the board make a decision on that.
All right, we have a motion on the table here, I think, Mr. Attorney General.
Yeah, so any other discussion about the minutes? All right, then. All in favor, aye.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Brad.
I will, these minutes are long, I'll vote no.
Okay, then the minutes are approved. We had two loans that are on our agenda for this time. Have these both been approved for proper public purpose?
They have.
Okay.
I would move adoption of the loans then. This is Doug.
I can second that. This is Matt.
Okay. Any other discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye. Aye, Doug.
Aye, Matt.
And aye, Brad. So we've all approved the loans. Then on to item four, we have an old business item that we didn't take care of at the last meeting or a previous meeting. I guess I'm not sure it was the May 5th meeting, but we carried it over to make sure we didn't skip that item from a previous agenda. Matt, I think this is something you proposed.
Yeah, it's just in regards to one, I guess, general. I mean, I've noticed some comments in the press, but specifically in regards to a comment Tia had said in the press that I found to be unacceptable. She stated that I was trying to hurt the BCPL. This was the quote that it was in the paper. There was some regional paper up in Minnesota. The quote went like this, quote, every day he gets up, tries to figure out another way to embarrass me, sully my name, or hurt this agency, end quote. And I guess as a commissioner on this board, I just don't appreciate my motives being questioned. I'll make it clear very, very much so right now that every decision I make regarding this board is to get more money for our beneficiaries, which is our primary job as trustees for this, you know, these trust funds. And I guess I just thought I'd put it on there to ask, I don't know if my fellow commissioners think it's appropriate for a staff member to publicly say I'm trying to hurt the very board that I serve on, and frankly, I have a constitutional duty to serve on.
All right. Are you finished? I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
No, go ahead, sir.
Well, I'd like to make a motion under this topic of staff discussion with press and public. I would like to move that this board rescind the ban that we put on talking about climate disruption, climate change. That was ridiculous because we do have a lot of forestry land which is affected by climate, and for Tia and our staff people to interact with other forestry groups up north who are concerned about how this affects us, it's not a big thing for them, but it will come up from time to time. So I move that we rescind that ban so they're able to to interact with their colleagues.
I think we need to put that on an agenda for the next meeting.
It involves staff commenting. I think it's appropriate at this point.
Well, this is Matt. Since I made that original motion,
excuse me,
my motion didn't concern. I agree just for a second with what the chairman just said. I mean, I'd be happy to discuss it in a future meeting. It's just my concern was never with the press comments. It was the fact of the advocating and, you know, going before the, you know, Congress or whatever. But and I think if you want to bring it up as a future agenda, I'd be happy to put on the next. I'd be happy to discuss it in a future agenda.
Yeah, Doug.
Well, I would ask Tom German whether it's germane to do it at this point.
Doug, I'm you're not going to get a second on it anyway at this meeting. Because the purpose of the open meetings law is to make sure that anyone that looked at our agenda could anticipate what we're going to discuss. They know whether they want to check into that meeting or not.
Okay. Well, I can understand that. Respect the Attorney General's position, and I understand that. So I guess I would then request that a consideration of rescinding that vote at the next meeting be on the agenda. Is that okay with everyone?
We can put that on the agenda, yes. You as a commissioner, you have the right to request items for the agenda, yes.
Putting it on the agenda makes sense to me as well.
Okay, thank you.
I guess, Doug, we'll wrap up with this comment because I don't want to dwell on this forever. But, I mean, we're all commissioners here. And, frankly, Doug, sometimes, obviously, you and I haven't agreed on a lot of policy issues here, and that's understandable. We, you know, have different backgrounds and so forth. But, I mean, I respect you as a fellow commissioner. You are elected to this board, as am I, and the three of us serve in co-capacities. None of us have any more power than the other. The three of us do. And, you know, if you were to make a comment to the press that I was doing something to damage the board, I wouldn't have a problem with that because I think you have every right to be. I do have concerns that a staff member would say that I'm hurting this agency because, you know, people might not agree with my views or might not agree with everything I've done, but frankly, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make every single dollar that we can so that we can give it back to our school children.
Okay. It's dangerous. It can be dangerous territory for individuals on a staff that serve at the will of a board to be publicly critical. So I understand your concern. I'm not hearing you asking for any kind of action, and
no, and I'm not going to do that. And I guess the only thing I would say is, I mean, we're an odd group in that there's three of us that are, you know, co-commissioners. I mean, it would be similar to, let's say, the Supreme Court or the PSC. And I mean, obviously, the Supreme Court would probably be a very good example because they've had quite a bit of, let's say, disagreement in the last year or two. But I have never read any comment from any staff member there criticizing any individual justice. And that's because those individual staff serve the whole board or the whole court. I mean, the individual justices might say stuff, but that's because they're all individually elected. So I guess I would just...
This is Doug. I
was just interrupted there, but that's fine.
I'm sorry. It's a little hard to know who's ended the conversation. I apologize.
No, go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, I think we understand the point,
okay.
And I think it's well taken, and I think Tia and Tom and the staff understand that, so I suggest we move on.
I'm fine with that. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I just point out, I don't know which article that is, and I certainly would not speak to a reporter as was characterized by it. I'm not saying it wasn't in the story, but I don't know. If you send me the story, Matt, I'd appreciate it. Because I never spoke that way to a reporter.
It was in the City Pages, Minneapolis, on April 10th, I think was the date. I could be wrong, but
yeah,
I called the woman. The reporter's name was Susan something.
I did not talk to a Susan something that I'm aware of. I did not see the story, and I would not say such a thing to the press or in a public manner.
Okay.
Okay. And under new business, we have. Discussion of the normal school fund, and I think that's kind of a follow-up of what we were doing at the last meeting, but let's who had requested this item on the agenda? I'll let them take the lead.
Well, like always, it's me. This is Matt.
Okay.
I guess I talked to the staff a little bit, but I also did some of my own research, and the normal school funds is the smaller of the two funds we manage. We have four funds. Two of them are basically Huffings, the agricultural and university fund. But the common school fund is the big one for K-12. And then the normal school fund is the one that does the supposed to benefit the UW system. And it's got most of our land in it. And I'm a little confused as to the distributions. It looked like in the documents that I provided for our meeting today, it looked like before 2009, the budget of 09, the money went to GPR. And again, I don't know why it was sent there. My understanding is supposed to benefit the UW system as a whole or the education schools. But then I guess I was shocked to read that it was given out in scholarship aid. If you read there's an attachment I included. It's statute, 46-something. Basically, it's $100,000 to the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies Scholarship, $100,000 in scholarship to a environmental degree at the extensions, and then the remaining $100,000 goes to UW-Stevens Point Environmental Program. All three of those, I don't know how they relate to the normal school, original education schools. I would much rather see this money just go generally back to either GPR, or if it needs to be exclusively for the UW, just give it as a blank check to the UW.
Okay,
I sent out
over an email with some other background information. It came over this morning. I don't know if you've had a chance to see that, Matt.
Oh, I read it. The thing I didn't understand about it is some of the background made sense to me about how, so it looks like in 1965 the legislature for some reason gave it to GPR. And I understand, I've read the Constitution. It does look like it's supposed to go to the schools, the UW system. And that's my understanding. That's what I've always been told by staff at the BCPL. I don't understand how it's earmarked specifically, though, for these environmental programs, which is really not help. It's not necessarily to the UW system. It's actually grants or scholarships.
This is Doug. I'm not interrupting, I hope that...
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I would suggest that we ask Tom German, the lawyer, to either comment now or if he doesn't know research, why that allocation was set up, and we can review it at a future meeting.
I can answer the question right now.
Okay.
Governor Walker's budget of included the two scholarships to UW Extension, deleted the money to DPI, joint finance, made a motion to have the money that would have gone to DPI for environmental education go to UW-Stevens Point. So BCPL has nothing to do with how these allocations are made. They're proposed by the governor and approved or modified by joint finance.
Okay, well,
okay, thank you.
Hey, Doug, this is Matt, though. I mean, I understand that it's been a carryover, but the change took place in the 2009 budget, which was obviously a different administration under Governor Jim Doyle. And in the email you sent out today, that you said that you actively asked them to change it. I don't understand, looking at it, how back in 09, because this is all a carryover. It's law since 09. And so that was the Dems budget with Governor Jim Doyle in 2009. Why that budget wouldn't have just... I get the changing it from GPR. I get that. But what I don't understand is why it wasn't just allocated generally to just to the UW system.
Because
I don't know why we're...
go ahead.
I don't think that does not... I mean, clearly in our state constitution, it didn't... These two groups of environmental degrees and the Nelson Institute of Environmental Studies, they never existed. So needless to say, we don't have to fund those individual groups. I don't understand why in 09, which is when that took place, and I'm assuming you lobbied on it back then, correct, Tia?
No, that was an act of joint finance. It was not included in the budget. Then in the next budget, the governor did include it in his budget, and joint finance modified it. So in both cases, it was the determination of that distribution was done by the joint finance committee.
Okay, but I guess you at the BCPL, whether it was you or the staff there, obviously, when they do things on that, I mean, we're a very small organization. We have 9 employees or whatever. I'm assuming somebody there would have asked this organization, meaning you or the staff there, what we thought of it. And nobody ever contacted the BCPL in regards to this change?
Well, no, I'm the one. If you look carefully at the memo I sent this morning, I went to the Joint Finance Committee and told them, asked them to investigate the diversion of normal school fund earnings to the general fund and to rededicate that money to the university, and that's what they did.
But they didn't give it just to the – I mean, I guess – you understand what I'm saying? It's not given to the university. It's given to scholarship aid for two individual specific environmental programs. I mean, if this was just a blank check.
That's a discretionary power of the Joint Finance Committee.
Yeah, this is Doug. I mean, I have other things I need to do, and this is going on. It was the decision of the legislature, and that's the law. Let's move on and not keep rehashing this.
Well, Doug, I'd ask you, where do you think that the money should go that we distribute from the normal school fund? Where do you think it should go? We have a
That's something that's a big issue. I'd have to look at it carefully, but certainly, I mean, you're going to University Stevens Point to help students. I think it's a fine thing. I haven't analyzed the details of it, but I think it's something that we can review the next time there's a budget and decide if the three of us want to make a recommendation to either the governor or Joint Finance for a different allocation.
Well, it doesn't, I mean, this isn't that much work. I mean, I think to send a letter to the legislature asking them that they allocate it to the UW generally versus giving it to three specific targeted programs seems pretty simple to me. I mean, if you want, I'll add it to a motion to the next meeting. We can discuss it then there, but I think it makes much more sense that this money is given as a general check and not earmarked for three individual programs.
Yeah, it is no longer earmarked in the governor's budget. Those earmarks are already gone.
The first two are gone as well?
All of them are gone.
So where does it go in the newest budget?
Don't know. Can't find it. There were so many changes to the university that we've been unable to determine whether there's any allocation mechanism there or not.
Do you think all of 36.49 has been deleted?
Tom?
Matt, this is Tom. Most of Chapter 36 was deleted.
Well, I mean, I think considering we are the Board of Commissioners, if we sent a letter to the members of Finance / the legislature saying where we think that these earnings should go, I think it would probably end up there considering, I know I have friends over there, it doesn't make sense that we wouldn't tell them it should go to the UW. Pretty simple to me.
It has been going to the UW in accordance with the law.
All right. Any comments? Any other? I guess that's about it, I guess, on that.
Well, this is Doug. I would say as confusing as the current budget is, and I, for one, don't know much more than what I see in the newspapers, and I don't think my fellow commissioners may not know much more, I would suggest that our staff continue to try to figure out what's happening and report back to us, and then we can consider whether we need to make our voice heard as to what's going on.
Well, I mean, you know, just going with that, I mean, the normal school fund, you know, I had sent Tia an email. She had CC'd you all back with a response. I don't care for the way that we use, you know, she said it's been that way many years, but that we use the expenses, we take that from the top. Because the normal school fund on our interest on the $26 million does make about $1 million every single year. Now, that money should be going to the UW, straight up. And instead,
well, I think we understand that point, so let's move on here.
Well, at some point, to understand the point, we'd have to make a discussion and make a vote on it. I mean, we don't have to do it today, but it seems
to be. Well, I think we were just told that it does go to the university.
Not all of it. The $700,000 for the land expenses comes right up. The BCPL takes it out of the top, and then they use the timber revenue to add to the principal, which doesn't make any sense to me. The revenue should be offset by the sales of the timber.
Yeah, the timber revenue has been this way for a long time. This is a common practice among the permanent school funds. Revenue from school trust lands must be deposited in the school trust funds. It's that simple.
Yeah, but we could decide if we want to offset. I mean, my whole point is I'd like to see that the number go from the $300,000 closer to $1 million. And I think we should work for that.
Okay, the next item six, discuss investment options. got an attachment all the way at the back of the packet. You requested this item, Matt?
There's just one item on it. Just something for us as commissioners to think about in the future. Right now, we have the authority via, because obviously our investment universe comes to us from the legislature. They tell us how we can invest. We make the decision. BCPL staff, you know, right now do the bonds. We could have, in the past, given this, some of this over to the SWIB, and I think there's a possibility of making some good money over there. They have fixed income assets just like we do, and their investment universe is much bigger. I know Tia early on in one of our meetings said that she'd like to see a larger investment universe, and many of the things that Tia says I don't necessarily agree with, but that one I certainly did. And the SWIB has their fixed income. They don't just have to do municipal bonds. They have a much larger. They have $20 billion in bonds over there. And I've talked to SWIB, and it looks like over the last 10 years, they've gotten a little over 5% on their interest, on their fixed income. So this doesn't include stocks. This includes fixed income. And we've managed about four, just a little over four. And I guess the point would be if we can make an extra percent, well, we have $1 billion. 1% is $10 million. I mean, that's not small money. So I think we as commissioners should look into this and see if there's possibly down the road any use in talking to SWIB about possibly doing some investments for us.
Okay, well, this is Doug. I have no objection to having Richard research and report back to us. Of course, we don't have $1 billion. We have less than that, and also we still have this Milwaukee Bucks thing hanging, which may or may not ever come to some issue. So I think we should definitely earn as much as we can, and I think that it wouldn't hurt for Richard to look at this option and keep us informed.
Yeah, well, just a quick update here. I've been working for, I don't know, 6-7 years to get this investment authority, delegation authority for the board. It was vetoed twice. We finally, on the third try, got it adopted. SWIB, for a long time, has not been interested in partnering with us. Under new leadership, I'm happy to say, after years of pursuing this, we both got the authority put in by the legislature, we got the governor not to veto it, and we got SWIB to sit down and talk with us about some options. We are actively engaged in those negotiations at this time. One of the, you know, challenges will be, is there something they can invest in that's outperforming what we can invest in that by a large enough margin to make up for what they're going to require us to pay them in fees, because they will make us pay fees. Rich is very actively engaged with Jeff Lucas, and I am actively engaged with Michael, the executive director, and after years of trying, we are finally making some progress. Whether it will make sense to make a recommendation to the board on a particular investment vehicle in partnership with SWIB remains to be seen, but we're working our butts off on it.
Well, this is Matt.
Okay, this is Doug. Again, to put historical perspective on this, I'm aware of what Secretary Nelson has just told us, and I've followed this for years now. We've worked hard on it. I want to compliment her and the staff and Richard for pursuing this to finally reach the point that we can at least talk to them. I'm concerned about the fees they might charge, but I'm open to get a report as to what the options are. And again, Tia, thank you.
When did the delegation authority, when was that put into the budget?
Tom, do you remember what year? The first time it was put in the budget was under Doyle, and he vetoed it.
I don't remember the year.
And at SWIB's request. I got it in the budget. Joint Finance put it in the budget at BCPL's request during the Doyle administration. SWIB requested that the governor veto it, and he did. I think he did it. I think that happened twice, and I think three times was a charm for us. It was, it's been very frustrating until recently to try to work with them. But Michael's a breath of fresh air, and if you want to know the exact date that I first requested that authority, I'd have to look it up. But it was a number of years ago.
Okay, well, this is Matt. But if we had it, did Walker sign it or Doyle sign it?
Doyle.
Doyle signed it.
Okay, so we've had it for 4 or 5 years. I mean, I'm glad we have it because I think we could be using it. And their investment, you know, whether it was, you know, Secretary of State made the comment about the box, obviously they have much more liquid bond market over there. And frankly, one thing I am concerned about is we have our trust fund's about $1 billion. We're up to about $500 million, so that's $500 million almost, in bonds. And I honestly, the people that are at BCPL, I've met Rich a few times, seems real nice, seems obviously knowledgeable, is good working over there, but I don't know what anybody's background in bonds is. I know at SWIB they have an entire department that manages this. So, I mean, this isn't a small amount of money at $500 million. I mean, Tia mentioned that, you know, staff are working over there. Well, obviously, if the commissioners, myself, the Attorney General, and Secretary of State, if we want to weigh in at some point, obviously that might have more credence, you know, more push.
One thing, Rich, there is, to my knowledge, Rich will correct me if I'm wrong, SWIB actually has no municipal bond portfolio managers. Is that correct, Rich?
That is true.
Yeah, so there is no one at SWIB who has Rich's experience.
But we wouldn't have to buy municipal bonds if we gave them to them, is my point. We could use any fixed income. And I guess I don't understand at BCPL which employee, before joining the BCPL, had come from the bond market. I don't think anybody did.
Well, Rich is our portfolio manager and has, you know, extensive training and experience.
Before coming to BCPL or since coming to BCPL?
Well, no, before he got to BCPL.
Oh, this is foolishness. Let's move on.
Well, Doug, I don't think $500 million is foolishness, but... I mean, we're
foolish to keep going around and around and around about it. We have the authority. We'll research whether it's economically viable, and we'll find out.
I understand that, but 1% makes a big difference when it could be millions of dollars. So
let me step in here for a second, Matt.
Go ahead.
One thing that I noticed is that you have stated that SWIB is earning 5% on their fixed income portfolio.
Okay, yeah.
One concern is that, you know, it's difficult to compare the two portfolios because SWIB returns include unrealized capital gains and losses, whereas the amounts that we are reporting include only interest income.
Mm-hmm.
The report that you're looking at doesn't include over $17 million now of unrealized capital gains and losses that are included in our portfolio. And so comparing the two is apples and oranges.
Well, the whole point is Doug wants to move off this topic. It'd be worth us talking more, and I don't think it would hurt for commissioners to be involved as well, because frankly, if we did take some of this off the plate of the BCPL staff, there would be less to do there. So, I mean, there's also a conflict of interest there. So I'll be happy to look into this myself as well.
Yeah, I take objection to the statement that there's a conflict of interest, for the record. We've been working for years to get to a place where we can delegate authority to SWIB if it makes sense. And this is something that I have worked hard to achieve. And none of us are operating here with a conflict of interest.
Well, I'm just saying going forward. I mean, if all of our bonds were handled by SWIB, as an example, there would be less to do at the BCPL then, correct?
Well, SWIB would have to hire a municipal bond portfolio manager because they currently don't have one.
But I'm saying, well, at some point, if we weren't in the municipal market, we wouldn't need to do that.
Yeah, and they also have expressly told us they don't want to manage the trust fund loan program. They have no interest in it.
Well, I understand that. No. Nobody's talking about changing the trust fund loan program.
I think I'm going to leave and handle some other business I have
to handle.
All righty? I wish you guys well, okay?
Have a good day. We can move on if you'd like, Mr. Attorney General.
Okay. So we've identified a couple of future agenda items. Potentially some action on the minutes and how we do that, and then revisiting the vote on climate change. Any other future agenda items?
Okay. I think the minutes are the most important. I mean, I agree that the staff should be able to do that over there. I think it's just important that they no longer do that. They just brief minutes. That's all we need.
Okay. And then, Tia, do you have anything else for an executive secretary report today?
I made a presentation, as I advised the board I would, to the Oneida County Forestry Committee. We had proposed, as you know, to sell or trade our land to them in 2009. We're unsuccessful, reinitiated that conversation. I went up to make a presentation. They indicated they were interested in, we have about 23,000 acres, I think, in Oneida County, approximately, and a subset of which is inside their county boundary. They have identified, they've ranked the acreage that they have prioritized. It is a little short of $700 acres that they're interested in, probably as a trade, those conversations will continue. The state treasurer made a proposal to them that they were very interested in which BCPL would pay, that the board would contract with the county and pay the county to manage BCPL lands and enter into what I believe would be some type of school trust revenue sharing agreement. Is that right, Matt?
I haven't finalized all the details. At some point, I'll decide if I want to make a presentation to the board.
So am I to proceed with the trade with the board, a trade with the county while we wait for you to...
As I said in the beginning of when I spoke on the conference call, any trade that's county to BCPL, any trade or sale, I'm always happy to support. I just don't want to sign too much land unless it's going to immediately increase some value and then sell it. But, you know, if you want to trade with the county and they want to do it, that's fine by me.
Okay, so I'll proceed and keep you posted on that. And then the only other thing is we're the agency's budget was approved as requested by the governor's errata budget request. And so things have calmed down a little bit here since that happened, I'm happy to say.
Yeah, this is Matt. Any more news on the Bucks, or have we not heard anything new?
Thank you for reminding me. We are now in a number of talks, continue to be, and are being more and more relied on. Rich and Tom in particular are turning into the go-to people for the financial analysis and numbers crunching. Really the challenge is to, for other people, not us, because it's not our job to judge the merits of the deal except for from a financial standpoint. So they've got to figure out what the deal is from a political standpoint first. And once they do that, we are at the ready to analyze whether it makes sense to put a recommendation before the board. And I would expect things to either gel or fall apart within, today's Tuesday, I'll give it 8 days. That's my prediction. I'm not betting. No gambling.
Right.
Okay. You want to make a motion to adjourn, sir, or should I do that?
Yep, we're ready to go.
Thank you. I'll make a motion to adjourn.
All right, everyone have a great day.
All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.